Welcome to the Passive Income Through Multifamily Real Estate Podcast, brought to you by Vertical Street Ventures, where we talk to top experts and seasoned investors to help provide clarity and key insights to keep you safe on your journey to financial freedom. Our goal is to help you get educated on how to create passive income for you and your family using real estate as your vehicle. If you enjoy the show, please go to iTunes and leave a rating and a written review to help us grow and reach more listeners.
Welcome back to the Passive Income Through Multifamily Real Estate Podcast. My name is Peter Pomeroy, and I am your host. Today, we have Charles Carrillo with us. Charles is the managing partner of Harborside Partners, a real estate syndication firm, and has been actively investing in multifamily and commercial real estate since 2006. Since that time, he has invested in over $200 million worth of investment real estate. Charles is also the host of the Global Investors Podcast, where he interviews professionals about investing in U.S. real estate. Charles, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me on, Peter.
Yeah, absolutely. It's good to have you on. So, just getting organized here. So, I just love to always ask, like, how did you get into real estate and then becoming an investor and then going even further and saying, okay, I'm going to create a company that, you know, has led to Harborside Partners? Take us through that process.
Yeah. So I grew up in a real estate investment family. In 1984, my dad bought his first multifamily property the same year I was born, which was a six family property. Wow. And I'm from a little town in Connecticut, and this was a city 20 minutes away from that. And so I grew up going to his properties. He owned with a partner at some point, probably like 100 units, and they self-managed them. He had a team, his own team, but they didn't use the third-party managers when I say that. So he had his own little management team that did it, superintendents, and they weren't the best areas, properties, which really, I didn't want anything to do with it when I grew up, kind of a business, you know what I mean? Where in the sense of like, I don't want to become a real estate investor if this is what real estate investing is. And
right.
I kind of understood, you know, everything about it and the residual part of it. And you kind of saw that and how my dad has really had flexibility. And like, we go on vacation and road trips for weeks at a time. And that was different than other people that I grew up with as friends. Their parents didn't have that. So that was a whole thing that showed me that part of it. My dad was a lifelong entrepreneur. And then when I graduated college in 2006, I bought my first property, which was a multifamily property. My dad made sure that I bought it in a much better area than he was buying it. Not much better, but it was a step up. He was buying stuff like D,
right,
C minus, and this was like a C plus property. And that was great because the property actually appreciated in value and had good tenants that we could put into that property. And it was great. And so I bought that property myself. I lived in one of the units. I rented out the other two, what we call now house hacking. And then like at the end of 08, I bought another one of those a block and a half away. And that's when I really found out exactly how to manage it. I had six units and I was doing it that way. And then 2009 really came around. The market really went down. And I bought a small commercial property a couple blocks away from that. And that was like a five unit with an office. I moved the office, put an office in there of my business, and then had four apartments above it, which was pretty great. So we got a great deal on it, but no one lent on money. So it was really just how much money you had or could scrape up from people to purchase properties at that point, which that was my own funds I paid it for. And then I had to renovate the whole property and I got it all rented out from vacant to fully rented in like right around 100 days. And that was during a cold Connecticut winter of doing all that. So that was my like forte into it. And then really trying to get into bigger properties. I moved a couple of years after that, 2012, down to Florida. And over the last several years, we've been really focused on buying bigger properties in better areas, you know, really focusing now on B-class properties. We're selling our last C-class property that I own in about 2 weeks. And that'll be a whole run from 2006 of C-class properties and really focusing on really getting into B-class properties because of, you know, better properties, better areas, but also a better tenant base. You know what I mean? And you're really getting into a credit tenant, you know, someone with credit, someone right. that cares about their credit, someone that wants to buy something with their credit in the future, which means that they're going to pay their rent on time. And that's something that
right.
C-class right. and below apartments, when you're collecting rent, it's the lower you go, the more of a negotiated it is every month, which is not for every investor, but it gives you a great
right.
credibility. I mean, it gives you great experience. And let's just say not credibility, experience when you're doing that process because you have to work with people every month on getting paid. But I was kind of done with all that. You know what I mean? And then right. if there's any disruption in their income, it just goes all the way.
It's like immediate.
I lost my job 2 days ago. Now it's hitting me right now. And now you're the first person I'm not paying. And then that's just kind of how it starts. And right, with stuff like that, when you're going through any type of hiccup, yeah, that's kind of, that's where it comes out. You know what I mean? That's where you see it.
Yeah. I mean, this, the C and B, I mean, you know, I haven't like personally said I would not invest or buy a C class property, but I don't think I have ever bought a C class property. It feels like I have sometimes, but you know, investors like yourself, you know, they talk about, it seems like they get to a place where they want to be in the B class properties, but they don't necessarily, you know, they don't necessarily ever say, I regret buying C class properties. I'm sure there's folks that are out there. It's just a very different business model that you have to, you know, budget for and, you know, prepare yourself for, whether it's, you know, negotiating the rent or your property managers or, you know, having enough reserves to deal with the, you know, all the fluctuations in income. So are you out of C-class properties, would you say? Like, have you done your time and reaped the benefits?
When I'm taking investors' money, yes. Yeah.
Okay.
I wouldn't do it with investors' money.
That's a good point.
If I found my, when I made a decision back in like, you know, 2020, we were like, that was the whole, our last C class we bought. And it was like a C plus. It's a good property. We're getting a good number for it. We're selling it almost at like a 4 cap to an investor right now. So it is I just wouldn't take investor money for it anymore because it's just, if I'm taking money from investors, I have to make sure that it's the one of the best consistent income streams.
Right.
And not that we had issues with it before, investors, it'll be probably the highest return deal we do. But that being said, it's one of those things that you just, you know, when, like you said, when every time there's a hiccup, I mean, it comes right down the line.
Yeah.
And it's something that some investors understand it, that invested to it, and some might not. And that's something where it's just, hey, if I bought it myself with maybe a JV with my father and my brother or something like that, perfect. We'll get a C-plus property in an area where we know it's going to growing area, and it's, you know, older property, fine. Because I understand how it works. And, you know, I'm not going to get calls from people if a distribution is $10 lighter than it was, you know, the quarter before. So it's just one of those things. That's how I do it. But with B-class, I would do that where I'm raising money, better properties, better areas so you can get that better tenant base.
Yeah, that's great. And that's a really great differentiation or your point that, hey, if I'm doing a JV with my brother or my dad or somebody like I'm close to who knows the product type intimately, that's real different than, you know, if I'm raising capital from investors. So on that note, let's talk about Harborside Partners, your business model. Share with us your business model. Are you raising capital? Are you also, just take us through and I'll ask away as things come up.
Sure. So what were we focused on buying down here in, because I'm based in South Florida, and our markets are really, currently right now, we have two markets that we like in Texas, Greater Atlanta and Georgia, and then we have three different pockets of markets in Florida between Tampa and Jacksonville. And those are really where we're focusing right now our time and our effort on. What we do as our role in the deal, number one, is that we have strategically set up now after doing two syndications with really being more hands-on, we've changed it around where we are partnering now with right now three different operators in these select markets that we've worked with for many years. And we are able to split up roles with them. Whereas, you know, every partner is bringing capital. That's kind of like a given. But we have our operator that's really doing boots on the ground. So we're tapping into mainly their team on the ground, which is really management and their contractors. And that's really important. Mm-hmm. And then what we're doing on our side is we're handling a lot of the asset management that can be done, let's just say location independent kind of a thing, where we're not showing up the property as much as they are. They're there probably weekly throughout the whole process, reviewing how projects are going, how units are going. We're really working with getting on calls with property managers, figuring out occupancy, figuring out vacancy, figuring out where we're going to put rents, figuring out where we have been getting leads from, right? Traffic from, where we're getting applications from, ultimately, and where we're getting tenants from. And then, you know, doubling down on that marketing and a lot of that in the back end of how we're assisting a lot of the asset management tactics. And that's kind of how when we're going in partnering with operators. And when we find these operators, these are operators that one of our partners has worked with previously, or in some cases, it's partners and that we have invested with passively into their deals. And we've seen how that's gone full cycle. And that's where we make our decision that, okay, this is something that we want to bring our relationship to the next level and actually partner with you and assist you with, you know, signing on the debt, putting money into the deal for upfront costs and inspections, and then also ultimately having our investors follow with us and invest alongside us.
I'm so glad we're talking about this because I don't know about you and your podcasts or conversations with people, but it seems frequently that, and you know, I could be wrong, maybe it's just my own experience. Frequently, you'll have a sponsor who's like dominant in a marketplace, you know, whatever that city is or you know, region. And then the partners that they have will be, you know, somebody comes in as a capital partner, primarily as a capital partner. And yes, per SEC, they have other kind of like obligations and responsibilities, but the asset management, the property management, and like basically all the other functions are led by the other partner. And then the capital partner might contribute, you know, very lightly to that. But it sounds like what you have like set up and do with your partners is something a little bit different, where it's a bit more mixed. And so as you were saying, the asset management pieces that you don't have to be on site to perform, you're able to like take those. And as an example, what I kept thinking as you were saying is you're like, part of your job responsibility is to ask a lot of questions about like why this and how come this and did you think about this and maybe consider this, and not to be like obnoxious about it, but to drive value for your investors. Am I kind of getting a sense of your model a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, we're getting weekly reports back. So most of my reports are going to come like on Monday night. So I'm like looking through them and I'll do it like quickly. I'll probably be like sitting on the couch or something and you're just like highlighting stuff. Highlighting, I'm like, okay, why is this number? And I look at, and I highlighting where the new applications are coming from. And then that's something I'll take notes on and like send it off. I'll probably put it into a Slack with our GP and be like, or our GP partners and be like, hey, this is a couple things that I saw this week.
Yeah.
This is stuff I'm going to bring up. Tell me if you want anything else, or do you just want me to send you like a transcript or audio of it or whatever? And we'll usually get on like a Zoom with the property manager so we can keep a copy of it. Yeah, not for legal, but just so everybody,
right?
You can't have like 8 partners on the call with you. I mean, it's just not like a good use of time. So it's just like, we'll copy it. We'll send it off to people in our group. And if I have some LPs that want to get their hands more into it and have more questions, they'll maybe get a copy of it if they request it. But I've had some like LPs that ask a lot of questions. I'm like, listen, I'll just send them the reports from property management. Like you can see exactly to the day today what we've rented and how our occupancy is doing
and
how everything is. And if people want to be like that, that's fine. If they don't want to start calling the property manager, that's a different type of relationship we have now. But I've never had anybody like that. But it's also, it's really a return on one of our properties.
Right.
We get no actual applications from like apartments.com, just for example, right?
Right. Sure, sure.
So you're like, well, it's okay. We'll still do it. But like, why is this happening? Is it just that people in this area outside of Atlanta do not use apartments.com for renting? They just like look it for, I don't know, moving there or something like this. And then we're like, Zillow does it. So like, okay, let's double down and like upgrade, put more ads up on Zillow.
So you can quantify the benefit.
And like utilize this. And then, you know, my thing is like, if I'm assisting on that end, it's really just to get the phone ringing down at the property manager's office and just get like lined up of traffic for them. So now they can hand pick who's going in there.
No, that's
like,
great.
Yeah, this guy's credits, Kenna. We don't,
but he's called.
Yeah, I don't want to get into stuff like that. I'm like, oh, we had this guy at 720 credit. We have
so you're helping to drive. Yeah. You're helping to drive demand for the property. So in terms of your investment strategy, are you buying, there's a two parts. I'm going to bundle two questions here. What your investment strategy is and your outlook for the next 12 months. Go for it.
Yeah. So really what in the last 18 months, we've taken down two deals, which is less than usual. And we had a deal that really penciled at the end of 2022. And with all the interest rate increases and everything like that, it was a great deal. It was probably $20,000 per door less than what it should have been going for, say, a year before. So that was something that was really got awry. And we don't really, unlike other teams that are already, you probably see this too. You see a lot of teams that are just doing deals because they have to pay bills, right? They have a big team. They have this is their main income driver is acquisition fees. And, you know, that's always makes me uneasy when you're getting deals from them. Cause now you're like really nitpicking, hey, where is this? Like, why is this getting pushed through when I don't get any other deals from other people? Cause right now where we are, we're in a very interesting part of the market. You know what I mean? So I think what we are really focusing on for the next 12 months is finding good deals in good markets. And we're making sure that where our debt is now, which is, you know, buying now is a little different than buying a year or 2 years ago, because we've already gone through this huge increase in interest rates, right? So you're working out your numbers here.
Right.
Interest rate caps are much different costs now than they were a year ago. You know what I mean? And so you're really getting through a lot of that, but you also want to see where those markets are going. And then we also, you want to buy with extra padding, because we don't know if we're just kind of in 2000, you know, are we in 2007 now? It's going to be 2008, you know, kind of thing where it's going to get a little worse next year.
Sure.
So
sure.
It's really buying deals. And as a mentor told me like many years ago, it's like, you know, you just want to buy like fat deals and always deal with fat deals. And that was like, you know, you don't want to like just start people sharpening their pencil and really getting in there and getting really aggressive on pricing. Those days are really behind, I think, most real estate investors in this market, hopefully. And for us, it's really if something pencils and we see it and there's a lot of opportunity that we can work on and we don't have to do it right away. That's the big thing too, is that not having to do all these units. Like if you have 100 units and you're, oh, I got to do 5 units a month or something crazy like this.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right. To make your business plan work.
Right. And we have a property now, 157 units, and we used to do like 3 or 4 units, right? Like last year, we were doing 3 or 4 a month. Now we're doing 1 or 2, mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And we're just, every time we rent one of the upgraded units, mm-hmm. we test it.
Yeah.
And then the other units, the other 3 or 4 units, let's just say mm-hmm. 5 units, whatever, are getting cleaned and getting rented, like just getting cleaned up, getting painted and getting rented. And, you know, a nominal rent increase there. And kind of seeing exactly, people are staying in properties longer. Our properties, we're seeing a lot more people renew.
Yeah.
And I think it's kind of people don't know. They kind of know something might happen or you're thinking it might happen. Mm-hmm. And it feels a lot like 2020. You know what I mean? Where you're like, all right, well, people are staying in their units longer. People aren't leaving. Mm-hmm. People are like accepting the rent increase of a little bit versus like getting into a new unit. You know what I mean? So I just think that's kind of where we are now. And that's what our outlook is.
Right.
We're always buyers. I don't want to ever be sitting on the sidelines per se and say, no, we're done for the rest of the year. Do I want to see how the next quarters unfold? Of course. But it's also something that I don't mind, you know, catching a property that might go a little lower in value. You know what I mean? Worry about that whole game. It's really just if you're getting good value for the property, if there's going to be a sizable upside, anything like that where you're buying anywhere near close to, you know, getting a discount from where it was years before, I think those are going to be the properties that are really going to outshine. But like the properties that we're hearing about people having issues in the market and losing them, they're buying bad properties in markets that aren't as, or areas that are crime. They have more crime in them than other ones. So that kills your buffer zone.
Right.
The buffer zone is where you have better properties in better areas.
So the VSV2 fund we're launching here, and we're really excited about it because the team has been hard at work researching funds, researching the right structure, making sure it's the right fit for our investors for the last 12 months. A lot of hard work has been put into it. And what it does for our investors is allows a lot of diversification, right? So you're no longer investing in a single asset and hoping that asset performs. We're going to be purchasing 6 to 10 different assets in different markets, which gives a ton of diversification for our investors. So really excited about this and launching it to our investors.
I think we could dissect everything. We could just stop here and just keep talking about this, and maybe we will. I don't know. But but I'm thinking about this, and I'm thinking about like the you know, want to buy fat properties or whatever. However, I like that, fat properties, fat deals or whatever. And there's like all these elements to like what makes a property. We'll just keep on this theme of fat. And so like one piece is like the location. You're right. And so in, you know, 3 years ago or so, you know, when, you know, buyer demand was great, is easy and understandable, where folks might be like, okay, you know, maybe not the best neighborhood, but it's a trajectory. Rent growth is 10%, 15% a year, all as well. You know, I see like now there being an opportunity to, you know, upgrade to better locations. And by doing that, that reduces your risk or makes the deal a little bit fatter. And implied in your comment that, you know, we were doing 5 renovations a month and now we're doing 1 or 2, we're testing the market, we're a little bit more cautious, is that, you know, when you were underwriting the deal, your business plan, I'm going back to this, your business plan was not dependent. The success of your business plan was not dependent on doing, you know, 5 renovations a month till all of them or 80% of them were complete. And then only after 80% were complete, you'd then sell it at a cap rate that you had projected based on, you know, the old days. And then you would then become successful.
Yeah.
And so there's all of these elements to reduce and mitigate risk. And not to like exaggerate, but like desperation is not one of them.
Yeah.
Being desperate to have to do those renovations and have to increase that rent and make sure the vacancy is whatever. And I think that that's kind of key. And I was kind of gathering that from what you were saying just over the last few minutes. Yeah.
So
with deals now, and like you mentioned the interest rate caps, have you been seeing, you know, I hear about this, but I don't necessarily see it so much, with the exception of some big examples, you know, like the Wall Street Journal, examples of people who have like one or two deals, three deals, you know, that's what they own, and they didn't buy rate caps and they're now, you know, in trouble. Are you seeing that in any of your markets?
No, I'm hearing about it a lot from other partners, yeah. You know, and I hear from brokers, but we haven't seen any of our properties. All of our properties are fixed, or we have one that's floating, but we've done so well that we have another year on that for rate cap, but we can refinance that anytime. That's not an issue. We're in a very special position on that property, but that's, you know, floating debt, and people didn't understand that. People didn't understand this kind of variable debt as well back in like 07. And it was demeaning to a lot of people. It killed markets because of it.
Yeah.
Because the interest rates went up and people couldn't pay for it. You know what I mean? They had these sweetheart specialty deals. It was the same thing with the bridge lenders today. You know what I mean? Where it's a little different. This is now on the commercial properties because most people got fixed on their own homes. But it's something that, you know, this is something that's come back to bite people with these interest rates going up. Resetting of the payment, however you want to say it, it's where people didn't pencil this in. And they also penciled in, oh, rents always go up 8% in the South, or always go up this. And right. No, they don't. I mean, people always ask, oh, how'd you get through like 08, 07? Well, we just raised rent 2 or 3%. You know what I mean?
Right.
Inflation wasn't crazy back then. And it was just like, you're just covering your costs and keeping people in the units. You can keep the occupancy and collections high. You're going to be able to weather all storms if you bought it correctly. Now, if you bought it
right,
where you need to make up this huge margin, where when your rates, you know, they go where they readjust to, I mean, you're never going to be able to get ahead of that.
Yeah,
I mean, that's like having 35% debt, you know, interest on your credit card debt. Like, you'll never get ahead of that. It's just like,
right,
you're just pummeled by it. So it's just something that I think people,
right,
they're just like found deals and they just like really did whatever they wanted to buy these deals, whatever they could. And they found lenders that would lend against it because they knew they had some sort of down payment equity bump there. And then hopefully they won't lose. Yeah. There. Hopefully they'll be like, oh, maybe we'll just take this property over. But that's just what we saw a lot of, you know, and I think a lot more of that's going to come up.
Yeah.
And I think it's going to be 2024, I think that's where you're going to see it.
Okay.
And it's not just going to be in multifamily. It's going to be everybody in these commercial asset classes that just got a little over their head with overpaying for stuff and not knowing that, oh, rents sometimes go stagnant and some only go up 1% and sometimes they go down. And this is just because these are amateur investors that took on huge projects and were able to raise money for one way or another because someone wanted to get involved in real estate and heard it on a podcast, or mainly gurus on social media, just putting stuff out there and just like, that's what happens, you know?
Yeah. What about speaking of investors, how would you characterize when you're talking to investors, you know, who might invest in, you know, new deals that you have? How are the conversations different today than they were, you know, 12 months, 18 months ago?
So I think the main thing is that one of the things that when we are talking to investors, it's really, I just have to kind of stress, the main thing is that, you know, you're buying into a business, right? And we've never had capital calls. Investors have never lost money through any of our deals, but it's, you know, we're buying a business. We're buying a business, and a business has 100 different clients, you know what I mean? Or potential clients that are paying us, right? And the other thing too is that, you know, our goal is we're going to give you distributions throughout the lifetime of the deal. Yeah, some months, quarters are going to be higher than others. Sometimes they might be paused if we're going through building up reserves or doing something or unforeseen repairs. And then the other thing is that, but throughout this whole process, we estimate that 60% of your money, of your gains, you'll be receiving on sale, and 40% will probably be throughout the lifetime of the deal. And the second part I also want to say is like, what's most important? Like, number one is preservation of wealth. Number two is no capital calls, right? You know what I mean? It's like, that's number two for us in our whole line. And then like number three is really hitting that equity multiple. Like, equity multiple is the most important thing in the return spectrum for us, because yes, I mean, that just means that, listen, our goal is to, if you put in 100,000 and we said you're going to get, you know, 1.6 on X or whatever the number is, you know, our goal is to hit that number. And if that means that for half the investment, some of the distributions are halved because we're really renovating these units faster than we were before, or that we're just being very conservative because we're going through a 2008, 2009 type event, whatever it might be, so be it. The main goal is that at the end of the day, when the property sells and, you know, 10 days after it sells, you're getting this you know, deposit into your account, this wire transfer, that's what we can show, right? And you add up all the distributions throughout the whole thing, that's what we're hitting.
Right.
And then I would say the fourth part of that is really the distributions. Distributions are a great thing of getting some of your principal back out of the property and, like, you know, seeing how well the property is from normal operations, right? We don't raise money additionally to give out distributions. We only give distributions from true cash flowing profit from the property.
Yeah.
And, you know, in different times,
let me pause you for a second on that, because I don't know that many of our listeners will have understood everything you just said, but it might be a new concept. And so if you can just a few extra sentences on, we don't raise money to provide distributions. We only provide distributions based on actual real cash flow. Just talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. So when how it's supposed to be done with real estate syndications is that you purchase a property, and let's just say we purchased on January 1st. In most scenarios, for properties we're buying, we're going to be starting distributions probably, I would say, somewhere around June or July, right? And we'll just tell people that just to make sure, even if we're starting it earlier, that's what we say, because the first 6 months of owning the property are really what the initial stabilization period is, okay? And that's where we really find out what's happening at the property. We understood, we did all our due diligence, we walked all the units, we did it, but I didn't go through there and check everybody's ID and make sure it matches the lease. You know what I mean? Right. Like, it's just not a thing. Right. Then you go in there, you figure out and you go, okay. And you know, as we grade the lease, we have an idea of who's good, who's probably not going to stay around much longer because they're not paying or the issue. And we have an idea of what it's going to take us to evict and get everything kind of moving the right way so we can start renovating the property. And what I'm saying is that when we buy day one, there's no profit, right? We have not made any money, right? And then as we start operating it, okay, we are, you know, we're making sure that as we're doing renovations, we're putting our new vendors in, we're putting contractors into the property to repair the deferred maintenance. This is where we start raising rents and we have the management there.
Right.
When I say raising rents, we're really getting rents to market on new rentals coming through. It doesn't mean we're just going in and jacking rents on all tenants. We're doing this little by little. So no matter how good your apartment building is, there's going to be vacancies. And so when those vacancies come up, we're going to fully renovate them. And then we're going to see exactly what the market's going to pay for them. And actually at the end of the day, okay. And then that's going to control about when people are coming in, we have some classic units. So units that haven't been renovated, are those getting a lot more people asking for, or are they asking for the updated units? You know what I mean? And we can rent both of them. And just the other ones are just going to be painted and cleaned. And if we see, wow, someone's going to pay $100 more a month for a unit that we just painted and cleaned, instead of us putting $5,000 into it to try to get $250, well, maybe we'll do more of these and just keep that money that we're going to keep for renovations, you know, in the bank until next time when it comes around, and then we'll renovate it.
Right.
And that's what you're doing the first time. So the thing is that when we're sending out that first distributions on the seventh month for probably, and we're going to probably keep one quarter of it in reserves, and the second quarter, we're actually going to distribute, right? A percentage out. In most situations, it's probably going to be your first year might be, we probably want to, on average, we say over the whole thing, you'll probably get 7% a year out in the distribution, right? The first year, it's going to be a lot less because we've been owning the property a lot less. It's in the infancy of what we're doing, and we just don't want to pay out everything we're making. So you might get a little distribution in July, and then it's going to be a little higher next through as we start doing it. And it's the first year, really, where we're getting that property and everything. You don't really see what's happening for 9 to 12 months after that. And you start seeing, pool got updated, and the clubhouse got renovated, and, you know, those bad tenants with this were out, and we have these new tenants in.
Right.
So it's actually coming from the real true cash flow of the property. It's not just like, hey, we needed $10 million to close on this property and do everything. We raised 12 so that we could give investors $2 million so they feel great about their investment.
What's going on, even though it's just, who knows if that they should feel great.
Yeah.
It's always nice to get money, but it's a lot better if it's coming from the operations of the property. So no, I wanted to kind of hit on that a little bit more. So all right, last couple of questions here. Share with us kind of a close call, near-death experience. You know, you've been investing for a long time. And not so much like what it was, but like how you managed yourself through it, how you kept your game, how you kept your focus and worked through whatever that particular challenge was.
I would think the most recent, I guess, in syndications would have been going through COVID. And really the March it was really March, April. The amount of time I've been on hold with a bank, I think, would be the whole my whole life put together there. I mean, it's just like, and we never had to pay a mortgage late. We paused distributions on one of our properties. And it was just one of those things where we, hey, in a, the call with investors was, there's nothing wrong per se here at the property. We don't know. But as we look
we
at,
don't know.
We don't know. And so we've contacted every lender and they're ready for us to pay mortgages late or discount, all the stuff that you don't know. And I had my own properties too. And they're like, you call up the banks and I'm like, are you, you guys can't pay rent? I'm like, I'm not saying we can't pay the mortgage, right? I'm just saying like, if I can't pay it,
right?
Like, is the, like, what are we doing here? Like, or like, you know, how are we, you know what I mean? Like, how does this process work?
Right.
So, cause I mean, obviously you don't want this going into like foreclosure, like, you know what it is.
Right.
And obviously we had very good, like a lot of people, we had, they had very good collections and we had very good collections on our properties through COVID and all my past investments in real estate too. And it was something that it was not as bad. What we saw, the worst part of it was really at the end of 2022, when the last couple quarters, when a lot of the federal money was taken away. And that's where issues, not on our B-class properties, on 1-10% or whatever it was during this thing. So we're like, we don't know if this is the beginning of it. And it really just, it, it hit so fast and it was done at the end. You know what I mean? It would, we just had to like dropping off eviction paperwork and doing cash for keys and all this stuff to get people out. And it lasted, the whole thing lasted about 6 months. You know what I mean? From the time it started to the time that we actually were able to get apartments back into the hands of tenants that could afford them. You know what I mean?
Right. So it sounds like, I mean, like my takeaway is in both instances, you know, you and your team really got in front of the issue as quickly as possible. And in the case of the, you know, the COVID, like we don't know what's going on, but, you know, let's get in front of like what could happen and what could that look like. And so you're building those relationships, coming up with like, you know, what the processes could be. The banks probably weren't even entirely sure what they were. But again, like getting in front of those issues quickly. Mm-hmm. All right. Last question here. You've invested in, you know, over 3,000 multifamily units as both active and passive. You've also invested in different asset classes, commercial real estate, ATMs, early stage tech, and agri tech startups. So it's, so you know, a bunch of different investing experience, both as active and passive. So my question is, kind of like, you know, just a couple sentences, so it's unfair. what's behind that? That's part A, and part B is lessons learned.
I would say, I like to have the diversification, so I know what I know within the real estate, and I love investing. I love real estate. I love investing in it and doing our own deals, but also investing in the deals that I really like and I think are very good by very good operators that maybe I wasn't able to be part of on the general partner time, but I want to have exposure to it, and that's a reason for passive investing there.
Yeah.
And then with the other asset classes, they're asset classes that I don't focus on, and I love to be part of it. And, you know, when you're getting into like angel investing and venture and stuff like that, it's just knowing that it's a much smaller percentage, you know what I mean, of your net worth going into it, because they're very, 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 very high risk.
For sure.
So, but it's very interesting. And seeing, I like how seeing the parallels between operators in the venture capital angel investing space are similar, but also a little different from real estate syndicators, where we're still raising money for investments that have risk, but it's also how they do it and how they portray the risk to their investors. Whereas it's much different how I would tell someone about buying a multifamily property versus, hey, this is early tech, you know, startup that doesn't make any money yet. You know what I mean? So it's a completely different mindset, but, you know, similar.
Yeah. Thank you for that, Charles. Thank you for coming on the show. If listeners would like to get a hold of you, what is the best way for them to do that?
Yeah. So everything that I've spoken about with my podcast, and we have a guide to passive investing in real estate, is all at our website, harborsidepartners.com. So you go to harborsidepartners.com and there is a, you know, our newsletter there. You can, if you're interested in passive investing, you can sign up there. If you're interested in learning more about all types of real estate investing, we have, you know, everything with our podcast and YouTube and the whole nine yards.
Excellent. Thanks. And for those listeners who would like to connect with me or would like to be on the show, please feel free to shoot me an email at peter@verticalstreetventures.com or reach out to me on LinkedIn. And as always, please consider subscribing to the show. And if moved, please leave a 5-star review so we can continue to have terrific guests like Charles Carrillo share their insight with us. And with that, thank you for listening. And I wish you all a terrific week.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed the show, please go to iTunes and leave a rating and written review to help us grow and reach more listeners. Subscribe too, so you can get the latest episodes. Lastly, to stay updated, head on over to verticalstreetventures.com. If you're interested in learning more about what we do, you can schedule a call with our team on the website. Thanks again for joining us. Be sure to tune in next week for another episode.